Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Chad Gill, 19 years of combination experience, third generation firefighter, captain on engine 210 with North Charleston Fire Department. Chad started out as a volunteer with a few friends. Over time, that transitioned to seeking out for a career position. Chad tested everywhere he could. It wasn't until a friend reached out and told him about an opportunity down south where he packed up and went. Although Chad was getting some serious experience, he just wasn't being fulfilled and wanted to fill a void he had within himself. A door became ajar to North Charleston, and with that, Chad made the decision to fully open it on his own. Once he did and came aboard, he knew exactly this was where he wanted to stay. With that, I present Chad Gill.
My name is Chad Gill. I'm a captain with North Charleston Fire Department down here in South Carolina. Been in the fire service since 2006. Career volunteer, got on a job in his local volunteer department. My buddies were kind of doing it, and I started hanging out there, and I said, why not join? I saw the fun aspect of it, didn't know anything really about it. My dad was on the job as a volunteer in the early 90s, never thought about it, wasn't my thing until I started hanging out there and took my first Firefighter 1 class and got bit by the bug. Absolutely love it. Started testing in 2000 and late 2006, early 2007, about anywhere and everywhere I could. I took 37 fire, police, dispatchers, any public safety test I could to finally get on. And in 2014, I finally landed down here in South Carolina in a county called Georgetown. Spent a year there. It wasn't really what I liked. Saw some really cool stuff, but it was low staffing, and my wife now, my girlfriend then, was kind of afraid for me to go to work. So I started testing again, got back on the train, went up the road to Merle's in the Garden City. Spent 5.5 years there, left as a lieutenant. I wanted something bigger, something more, and I got on with the city of North Charleston. And that place saved my career. Absolutely love it. Love engine work. I never thought I'd ever be in the right front seat again. But that kind of came at a fast pace. Absolutely love it. I would never change anything about it. And I love going to fires. And that's pretty much it.
Okay. So second generation firefighter, of course, because you mentioned your dad was a volunteer.
Mm-hmm.
Did he ever go career or just he stay volunteer?
No, he tried testing. He did back in the early 90s. And it was very political, unfortunately. And up north is a lot different than the south, and he didn't score well enough. And finally just gave up because the only paid department around the house was the city of Buffalo. There was no incorporated towns that were ever paid, and they still aren't to this day. It's all volunteers. So you want to get in, you got to move into the city. I don't think my mom wanted to really live in the city either. So that kind of put a damper on things. So he just stayed as a volunteer, and then we moved and he kind of got out of it. Life took over and didn't have time for it anymore.
Okay. And so with that being said, how did you make your way down south?
I actually got a Facebook message from somebody that I was a volunteer in the town with in another department. Goes, hey, so this department is looking for people, and I know you really want to get on a job, and you should apply. I said, okay. So I literally pencil whipped the application. I was 26, and I knew I had to figure out my life. I was working part-time jobs and hopefully something would pop through. And I pencil whipped the application. I sent it in. My girlfriend at the time, she was going on a trip in Florida. One of her brother, I think her brother, stepbrother, half brother, one of them lived in the Carolinas. And her phone's always dying. And I thought that was her calling to check in. You know, she was at the wedding and it was the battalion chief calling to schedule the testing process. And I couldn't believe it. You know, I made it to the chief's interviews, you know, in a lot of places, and that was it. Mm-hmm. I came down, I scored pretty well, I guess, and got picked up. They called me like 2 weeks later and said, hey, can you start? And I was like, I don't even have a place to live. And so I deferred it for about a month, you know, just to finally get my life straight and, you know, get a place to stay and the whole nine yards. And I never looked back. And that was in 2014. I would never move back to the north. I absolutely love it down here.
Amen to that. I will agree with you on that. I mean, I'm from up north too, and I have no desire to go back at
I mean,
all.
you get homesick, you know, it, like when you first moved, like it was great. And then you got homesick. And then I was like, there's nothing there for me other than my folks and my family. Like, what am I going to go do? Back working part-time jobs and just not making any money? I said, nah, I'm good. I'll stay down here. No snow.
No, hey, amen to that. I mean, every once in a while we'll see it, but it's not like up north, that's for
Oh
sure.
no, and everything shuts down, so it's
Everything
great.
does shut down. That is the comical part, because it's like, really? There's like, it's a flurry. You know, we have a dusting, and it, like, grocery stores are packed and schools are shut down. And I'm like, oh,
Everybody's
okay.
freaking out, and you're like, man, we drove 55 in this. What are you
That's what
talking
I'm
about?
saying. All right. So how was it going through a recruit class and then just not feeling fulfilled and then jumping right into another? Was that a difficult decision for you?
So when I got on with Georgetown, there was no recruit class. They honestly took my New York certs. And I had to test out of a lot of them and retake classes. So they didn't have a recruit class. So, and then when I went to Merle's Island, they didn't either. It was, all right, cool. You got Fire One, Fire Two, and you got this. Cool, sweet. All right. Just take these classes and you'll be good. It wasn't until I got to the city in 20 when I got on down there that, hey, you have to go to an 8-week recruit class. I said, okay, I've never done this before. I'm ready for it, you know? And going from having previous training, I got hired on as a direct hire. So you have your Fire One, Fire Two, and your EMT. So you kind of skip that part of recruit school and then you fizzle in. So that was a little bit of an adjustment with that. But I think 7 of us that were direct hires that fizzled into their recruit class. And I played dumb. I played really dumb. You know, yeah, they knew I had experience, but I never talked about like what I did or anything like that. And I think it was like 2 or 2 weeks before we graduated, they're like, you were a boss? Are you kidding me? Why didn't you ever say anything? I said, because that was a past life. You know, I'm a probie here and I'll take what I know and show you on the fire ground, not sit here and talk war stories. So that was a huge adjustment, but I loved it. I loved the discipline when I came in. I'm an early morning guy, so it was great for me. And I absolutely loved it. I really did. It was a not a hard 8-week thing, but it was rigorous. I mean, but I loved it. I really did.
And this next question, there's not this is not a jab or anything like that, but I want people to understand. You mentioned how you were on a couple departments, you got your experience, I'm sure you worked with great people, but you just weren't being fulfilled until you got to North Charleston. So can you explain a little bit on why you felt that way when you got to North Charleston?
Leadership. I can't harp on it enough about leadership, not the dog, any other place. I felt when I got to the city and the leadership that they have there, I felt valued. That was a huge thing when you show up to work and you feel like you have a seat at the table. And I absolutely love that. Not that I'm not a metal guy. Don't put me on a pedestal or anything like that, but I like to, if we're having a conversation and they're like, man, like that's a good idea, or hey, what do you think? And that was how the city was. And I loved it. And I loved the fact that the city is a hub for everything. We're protected by water. We got industrial and commercial and double wides and single family dwellings and high rise. I mean, it has a railroad. We have everything. So when you go to work, you're not just going to medical calls. You have the potential to go to, we went to a house fire the other day, and I could leave there and go to an entrapment on the interstate. I can go to a medical call. I can go to a high angle call where I feel fulfilled as a fireman that what I went to school for, I'm actually doing. And I'm not just showing up to work and going on medical calls or riding an ambulance. And I feel like there was more to the fire service than I needed that everybody talked about, but I never had. Just the training aspect, the brotherhood, and I know that's a tough word that everybody talks about, and it's there, but it's not there like it used to be. But the low country has a different breed of firemen compared to anywhere else. And that's not a jab anywhere or anything like that. It's just, it's different. And people take care of each other, it seems, a lot more. You
Right.
know, they're reaching out to each other, and because we have guys on FMLA, and it's like, hey man, how you doing? And I saw it when my grandmother died, and my acting battalion chief called me when I was up for the funeral. I thought it was kind of weird that I got a phone call, from a battalion chief on my day off. And I called him back and I said, hey man, everything. He's like, I'm just checking in on you. You doing all right? And I was like, holy cow. Like, I've never had that before. It was always, if my friend phone rang on my day off, it was always, your guys did this, or what are you doing? And what's this? And it was always work. It was never a caring phone call. And that's where I knew I found the right place. There's no doubt about it, for
Okay.
sure.
No, well, I can't argue that. Okay. As far as North Charleston, can you explain to the listeners, including myself, that don't know much about North Charleston, how many stations, personnel, things like that?
Yeah, so we just opened up another firehouse last year, a little over a year ago. We took over a part of the river across the way of the Ashley River. But North Charleston was 75 square miles. It's a little bit more now with us taking over across the river. We have 13 firehouses because we don't have a 13 firehouse. They find a juju, but we have an engine
Yeah,
13.
yeah,
So
yeah.
there's an engine for station 14.
Okay.
So we have 14 engines because we have two engine companies in one house, four aerials, two heavy rescues, and three battalions in a division that runs every day. We run about almost 30,000 calls a year, mostly EMS, just like anywhere, pretty much. We don't transport. We run three on every engine. We're slotted for four every day on a truck company, and three on a rescue slotted for four. So we are slotted for four on every piece. We run an auto aid agreement with six or seven total departments. I believe we're up to seven now, where it goes closest units for the AVL.
Okay.
So there's no, I have been at a working fire where I had a City of Charleston chief in command, a North Charleston chief in accountability, and a St. Andrews battalion chief as my safety. We all have the same SOGs for fire ground operations. And I can't ask for anything better than that for the citizens, for sure. When you show up to any one of those and you know you're due, you just go to work. There's no asking command, hey, what do you need? We're on scene.
Right.
It flows. I think we have like 280 employees total between admin, up in City Hall and training, give or take around there. Kind of fluctuates. We run
Okay.
about one or two recruit schools a year. And we have currently have one in going right now.
Okay.
So,
I did not know you guys were that big.
yeah, and a lot of people, like you said, a lot of people don't know about North Charleston. I did not know about it until I moved down here. And one of the guys in recruit school right now, I met at a little mini conference up here in the PD. And he's like, tell me about North Charleston. Like, never heard of this place. What is it? And I told him, he's like, you guys are a hidden gem. Like, I didn't know anything about this. They call us the, job town of the low country because we run the most fires, I guess. But we run a decent amount of fires. City of Charleston has more equipment, more firehouses, but we do more with less is probably the best way to put it.
Gotcha. Okay. Now I've known that because you mentioned St. Andrews, I've had Tim McCloskey on before, and he talks about how there is no jurisdictional lines. He's like, if we're close, we're going. And I think that is fantastic.
Yeah, I actually saw Tim yesterday. He's one of my good friends.
Okay.
So we don't get to really see each other. We're on two different shifts, and we did run one fire together a couple months ago, and we took a picture. And because I said, "Man, you drove pretty far to get here," I said, "This is probably never going to happen again, unless I work on the south side of the city." So we gotta snap a pic. But he loves it down there too. There's no doubt.
Okay. So is it a possibility for North Charleston to run with Charleston?
Absolutely, south side of the
Okay.
city. So you get into like station two, station one, even station three-ish, depending on where they're going. Absolutely. You get down on that corridor of the city and they're running back and forth. Especially with aerial companies, like a lot of times those are out of service just due to mechanical and we don't have a lot of spares for them. So we're pulling in them guys. If anybody's coming to us, it's usually for an aerial
Okay.
just because of the maintenance.
Right.
I mean, it's just how it is. But like 109, which is the hazmat station, they run a decent amount with the south side of the city coming to us, because they're literally probably less than 2 miles from station two. So depending on where in the in station two's area, they're probably going to be on it.
Okay. All right. All right. So obviously you're feeling fulfilled now, and I've had conversations, and I know individuals who said the same thing, like the current department that they were on, they just didn't feel like the title that they owned, meaning firefighter, like they didn't feel like they were doing that. And I totally get people. You know, everybody has a different passion. Some people want to work for big city departments. Some people don't mind the small urban, rural, urban, suburban type departments. But to me, as everybody, like, there is no room for me to judge somebody that says, hey, I just don't feel like I'm being fulfilled. Like, you have to go where you feel like you're being valued and where you feel like you are contributing, to the community that you serve. So I 100% get your standpoint. My question to you is, when you got on North Charleston, how long and why did you decide to start moving up the ranks?
When I got there, my wife Amanda, we were still engaged at the time. I didn't even tell her I was going to test in the first place. That was my mental health was wrecked and my home life was wrecked, and I had to make a decision, and I didn't know how bad it was. And I reached out. I called her when I pulled into City Hall, and that's how it all started. So she's like, "Oh boy, okay, we're really doing this." So when I got on the department, she looked at me. She's like, "So what's your game plan?" And I said, "I want to be a fireman." And she started laughing at me. She's like, "Yeah, well, like, are you ever going to work your way up the ladder again?" And I said, "I don't think so. I didn't like it. I hated it. It seemed like everything I did was just wrong, and I every day was something different. You know, like, oh, you did it this way. You're supposed to do it this way. So then I did it that way, and it was, oh, you're supposed to do it this way. I just was miserable. I hated the spot." And I never wanted to do it again until I still started working with those guys at the city that really showed me a different aspect of the job and how it was supposed to be ran and how I knew I could fit the mold that they wanted. So when I got there, of course, they find out your background. Everybody finds out your background. And he goes, "All right, so you're ready to start driving?" I said, "I've been here 4 months. Are you crazy, you know?" And Joey, my engineer, was like, "No, come on, man, you got experience." And I said, "You know, y'all say that." I said, "But how do you not know I wasn't a shitbag or I didn't know the job? Just because I come with experience don't mean I know what the hell I'm doing." And I really hated that because everybody's like, "Oh, you got experience. Oh, Danny, you got experience." Yeah, but you don't know what I did. You don't know if I was horrible at the job. Paper don't mean anything. I mean, your resume don't mean anything until you show it to me. And that was my big thing. So it was about almost 2 years, and I finally said, "All right, I'm ready to start driving, you know." And a couple of guys were asking me to transfer over and everything like that. I said, "No," I said, "I want to start driving." And we're hurting for engineers, so it's not really a pressure, but they were kind of like, "Hey, man, we kind of know your background, and like, you should probably start driving." So I did, and I was like, "Man, I like this. I do. Like, I like driving. This is fun." So I got my company driver, which you have to start off as an engine driver, do your books. And then I did my rescue book and my truck book, and then you test for backup driver. And the backup driver is a pay increase. It's a little bit of a promotion. And then I was a backup driver, and I was like, "This is great. Holy cow, I'm touring the city, working with different people. One day I'm on an engine, next day I'm on a truck. So I kind of see both aspects of the job." And then promotion came around for engineer, and then I tested and got promoted engineer. And I was like, "Well, I'm driving every day. I might as well take a promotion. I mean, it might as well." And I started as an engineer, transferred to a pretty busy company, on engine three on remount. It was great, but I knew the city needed more, and they were promoting some people. And I'm like, people started asking me, "Hey, you gonna start?" I'm like, "Not now. I don't like, I don't want it. You know, like, I'm enjoying it." Well, then I started working with some detailed bosses, and it really pushed me. That's probably the best way I can put it. Pushed me to test again, and I did, and I got put at a slower company, and I needed it. I didn't realize I needed it, being at busy companies for so long. I got to the slower company, and it did a lot for me that I didn't realize I needed. Did my year and a half there, and I just transferred Engine 10 a month and a half ago. And Engine 10 is the busiest engine in the city. It's taking like 3,300, 3,400 runs a year. Pretty busy, and I couldn't be happier now. I got some good guys I work with. They make my job easy. It's probably the best way to put it.
Okay. I definitely have a question for you. You mentioned that you were always at a busy station, a busy assignment, and then when you got to that slow house, it was something you didn't know you needed. I bring that up because I hear it a good amount of times where individuals who get assigned to a slow house that they don't have the option. That's what they're given, whether it's promotion or, hey, we need you to fill in this role over here. Firemen tend to make fun of slow stations. And I get it because at a source or the retirement home, whatever you want to call it, like, yes, you don't run as much. Sometimes those individuals there aren't dialed in because they don't have that experience. But I would like for you to talk about how being at that station gave you that reset you didn't know you needed.
Yeah, and because these busy company, I mean, I loved it. I love being in a busy company. You go to so much and you're exposed to so much, and the experience is second to none. Everybody knows that. The guys are the go-getters, want to be there. Well, I happen to be one of those guys that loved being at a busy company. So when I got this assignment, I got up there, and the house is known as like the land of the misfit toys,
Okay.
kind of. It's kind of, hey, yeah, you're gonna go there. And I got up there, and we had to do some tweaking. It wasn't as bad as I thought it was gonna be, but the call volume wasn't there. And I had a guy call me from Station 5. Called me up and said, "Hey, I'm looking to transfer." He's an engineer, and he goes, "I'd like to come transfer to you." And I'm like, "Why the hell do you want to come to me at a slower station than you're at?" He goes, "Well, my work son is getting promoted, and the only way for him to stay at Station 5 is if I leave and I'm retiring in a year and a half. And I'd like to go to a slower company, and I'd like to come work for you." And I was like, "Okay, man, come on. Sure, why not?" Because I had a backup driver just driving me. It wasn't an engineer position. So he came over, and he retired once out of Michigan. And he did a lot for me too, of just the reset and the slowing down I needed, because I was always on the go and we weren't getting a lot of sleep, and it was eating on the go and training and then 17 calls. It was kind of like the mentality you had. So then I had the, oof, okay, we can go to the store now. We can go do training and not get interrupted. And I had a new guy that we were able to train with him and make him better and then make myself better too, learning off him. And I really needed that. And I had time to sit down, work on a lot of things that I really needed to accomplish that I didn't have time to do. My mental health was increasing, because I just wasn't always tired all the time. I wasn't always worn down. But then it was about 6 months, I was ready to start running calls again. So I'd pick up overtime, and I tell the chief, I'd be like, "Hey, think you can put me in a busier company?" I'm like, "I know it's kind of hard to, I'm asking a lot, but kind of need to run some calls."
Right.
I'm kind of not liking this 3 call a day thing, And so I kind of got the, I'd work an overtime shift and be busy again. But that the reset, and being a new officer again, did a lot for me to really understand my people and sit down and just read and listen and on other things to really help me develop myself as an officer is really what I needed.
Okay. Love that. All right. With that being said, in your professional opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
I love this term because where I used to work, they hated it. They absolutely
Mm-hmm.
hated it. They hated that word. And it is moving with a purpose on the fire ground. You have to be a, when you go to a house fire, you have to aggressively attack the fire. No matter if it's interior, exterior, it don't matter. Okay. We could talk tactics all day, but when you're aggressive and you're moving with a purpose on the fire ground, safely, of course, not like an idiot, the fire goes out. You have to aggressively attack the fire, no matter if we're making a push through the front door, if we're raising a ladder pipe, it don't matter. When you're lagging outside, getting on the truck, and you don't care because you don't care what due you are, that is doing a disservice to the citizens. You have to be aggressively out of the firehouse. The tone's dropped. Get on the truck and go. Prime example, we were in our third, we should have been third due at this house for the day. We were second due because we aggressively got out of the firehouse quick. The tone drops, you get on, you go. You know, knowing your run, knowing where you're going is huge to aggressively get there. I mean, I don't know these people that hate the term aggressive because I think they confuse it with reckless, honestly. I really do because they're like, oh, he's too aggressive. Well, no, are you jealous because he's good at his job? Is that what it is? You know, and is there reckless aggressiveness? 100%. You see it. We see videos and we're like, what were you thinking? Like, oh my God. But you have to move with a purpose on the fire ground. And if that's the term, it meets the term aggressive, then that's what that is. You should be moving. I don't care. I remember when we grew up, it was like no running on the fire ground. Oh my God. You know, you can't run on the fire ground and it's two people carrying a 24-foot ladder. That's how I was raised in Fire One. And probably most of us were. Now that's changed. Okay. First off, fires are burning so much hotter nowadays. You know, we're not going to those old homes anymore. I mean, we're going to those old homes, but the stuff that's inside is not what it used to be. It's burning a lot hotter. So you have to aggressively get there. It's weak, you know. I mean, we could sit here and really hammer this term out because so many people take it and miscue it the other way around. They think it's like a derogatory term. You know, and if you want to sit instead of staying aggressive, move with a purpose, then that's what that is. And there's no other way around it. You should be moving. When you get off the truck, you should be running. If you're not carrying a hose line, of course, you know, if you're on the truck, you should be moving. You know what I mean? Like, even when you have the line on your shoulder, you got the Minuteman loaded, and you're moving with a purpose. You may not be running, but you're moving. We're not, this isn't a lollygag job. This is a down and dirty blue collar job, and you need to move with a purpose. The citizens count on us. There's no doubt about it. And the people you see just walking, just like, do, 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 like, okay, well, they're just gonna go past you. I don't know what to. We'll see. We'll see at rehab. You know, I mean, best way to put it. No.
So with you being a company officer, this is a two-part question. When you finally figured out, like, hey, all right, I'm ready to jump back in the saddle of being a boss, what kind of leader did you want to be, and what does leadership look like to you?
So I worked with some really bad bosses throughout my career. I've worked with some really, really good ones. And you learn so much off the bad ones. You really do. You learn so much more off the bad ones. And I worked with a boss at the Inlet, Emeril's Inlet. And I use this, he's one of my mentors. And he taught me actually nothing about the fire department, ironically. He taught me a lot about life. And I didn't know he was teaching me a lot about life. Until he passed on. Richie taught me so much about being a better human being, being a better husband and a better friend. And my people skills got so much better because of him. And I didn't think he liked me when I started there. He was miserable. He was. And him and I became best friends. And when he retired, we hung out and everything like that. But when I took off what he did as a person, and I applied it to when I promoted, and taking care of your people is the number one thing you can do as a leader. And knowing your people and caring, you have to literally care about your people. There's no, you want your first step of leadership, take care of your people, know your people. And when I got up to that slow station, and I was able to develop a program, and it's on leadership, ironically, and being able to see individuals learn off that and what I've learned off those bad bosses, really, and do the complete opposite of what I want them to do. Being a company officer is very difficult. It's a lonely road. You know, and I don't even like the word captain. I don't like being a company officer. Please don't call me that. You know, when we're at the fire, I don't care. Like that, I would love to wear a black helmet, get rid of my red helmet. Love to wear a blue shirt, not a white shirt. One, I get it dirty all the time, so let's not always have that. But it's just a title, and I don't care for it. My name's Chad. My last name's Gil. Call me either one you want. It don't matter. I'm no different than anybody else in the fire ground. I just have to make some decisions. You know, being a company officer, I still pick up a broom. I get yelled at it all the time. All the time, I get yelled at for it. And you have to lead by example to these guys. I can't tell them to do something that I will never do. And I think that's wrong in the company officer world. I think a lot of people get up to those positions and they forget where they come from. They forget being that young guy. They forget doing the grunt work. Man, I want to do the grunt work. I want to hook ceilings. I want to make pushes down hallways with these guys. I don't want to just stand there and point fingers. Like that's not, I don't think that's an effective company officer. I think you have to be there in the trenches with your men. You have to be making pushes with your men. You know, that way they know that you have their back at the end of the day.
So, with you being a company officer, right now I am in the process of our lieutenant's position, and my captain I have now, he let me ride the seat last shift in the shift before. And so we went to the training grounds, and we did a scenario where, I established command and I had to go inside, and we had like a mock fire that we actually stretched line, charged it, and we're going to where the seat of the fire was to extinguish it. I realized it's so hard not to get involved. And he said he agrees, but so I want to hear your stance on it. But as the guys were making the push, I was humping hose with them, but I also had to make sure I knew where they were at, listen to the radio in case I was called. And there was a point where I was kneeling next to the hose on the floor, but I felt like I couldn't do anything because I have so many other responsibilities. Is that a hard transition from someone who's been in the back, always a go-getter, getting dirty, to moving up to company officer?
It is. It is. And there's a lot of things that, shit, I gotta let Danny do that. You know, and you're gonna run into that. And then there's times where you need to help him. You know, you need to be there with the guys. And it is a huge adjustment. And I guess it's, well, how do I want to put it? It's a routine that you're gonna have to get. It's probably the best way to put it, because if you run 3 to 4 guys on a rig, you may not need to always hump hose. Okay, but if you're running 3 people on a rig and your driver's pumping the fire, it's you humping hose for your fireman's on the nozzle. So there's that happy medium where you need to know how much to do, and then it's too much you've done. You know, when you're in there making a push with your men, even on that mock fire, take a realization what's around you. You know, okay, don't get the tunnel vision. Oh, there's the fire, but what else is going on around you? You know, do you have to listen to the radio? You know, do you work with a chief that ask for a CAN report every 3 minutes, you know, or do you work with a chief that asks for a CAN report every 10, where you can do that work and you're able to get in there with the men. And before you know it, that second CAN report comes and, hey, chief, fire's knocked down because you went in there and you attacked it and you got it down to, at the seat. So there's a huge adjustment for doing too much and not doing enough. And you're going to have to find out the happy medium, how skilled your guys are too. And that's where, do you have a really aggressive nozzleman? Do you have an experienced fireman? Or Danny, are you there really pushing them to be better? Which we're always there to push them to be better, but where are they at of their skill level where you have to be more involved than maybe somebody that has more experience where you can be less involved? And that's the happy medium. And like I always have my a Halligan bar with me. First do, second do, it don't matter. And when you're first or second do, we can force the door. You can still do that, especially if you're at a 3-man company and you got the attack line, the truck ain't there yet. Well, Danny, guess what? You get to force the door. So you're still part of it. You know, that's not doing too much. That's, well, we got to get in there and knock it down. And it all depends on your SOGs or SOPs too. But you know, where you're gonna figure out where you've done it, you're at your limit of where your men accept you to not do any more work. And that's it's going to be a tough one to really find. And of course, not being used to talking on the radio and stretching hose lines and all that is going to be a huge adjustment for you, because you're going to be like, they're calling me again. What? Like, stop calling me. I'm busy, you know, but you have to answer them, you know. So you're going to find that happy medium, you know, of being too involved and not involved.
You obviously you've had some people within your life that has definitely helped guide, maybe change the way you look at things, outlooks on life. So How important is, whether they know it or not, how important is finding that, what I call that mentor, for that mentorship, for a new person coming in?
Especially in the volunteer world, we didn't have that. There was no thing as a mentor. There was a mentorship program, like you were the new guy, and hey, Danny, you're going to mentor this guy, and but it really wasn't a mentor. It was just somebody that was training you. And it wasn't until I really got close to Richie, and then of course, Tim McCluskey, one of my good friends. And it's just when you find that person that you latch onto, that you're like, that's who I want to be like. Like, that guy's got a positive outlook on life, or that guy's really knowledgeable about the job. And there's so many mentors throughout my career, but those two individuals, one, Richie, that really shaped me up as a human being to be better. And then Tim, with his knowledge of where he comes from, really instilled it into me to be so much better than I was, to be completely honest with you. And Chris Gay, I work with at the city, you lean on these guys because you surround yourself with like-minded people in this job. And those people, just they changed the fire service tremendously in my career, just on tactics and how to handle things and the training level. And we were always told, we got to a point of the safety aspect of, oh, everybody said they're reported out, we're not going inside. That was, my God, that was it for how long? And you're just like, and you got on board with it. You can't lie because that was just instilled. And it wasn't until you make your first grab that you're like, that is BS. Like, I'm not listening to that guy out in the front lawn. And that's where Tim came in involved. And he went on a lot of fires that he's been on that report everybody was out. And next that his crew found somebody. And there's guys in the city that have had that too. And it's like, you can't. I know fire's blowing out every window, and we could sit here and talk. That's heavily involved. We can't make it in, and there's no viable victims. And you hear that too, and you're like, well, how do you know there are no viable victims in there? You got to get in there. You got to make the difference. And these guys that have just really instilled it into me to be so much better, and in a positive way, of course, too, because you get stuck in some negativity with some people, and negativity, of course, travels faster than positivity, but. You find those people that are like-minded that you want to be like, that those are your mentors. And you could have a dozen, you honestly could, but there's a couple of them that really instill it into you about what it's like about being a fireman and being better, because you always want to strive to do better. The fire could have went perfect. We'll just say it went perfect. There's always something you can do better. You could have turned out quicker. And that's where a lot of these guys in Tim instilled it in me, getting out the door quick. Stop lagging ass, get out, and seeing them boys in PG where he was turning and burning in 15 seconds at a firehouse is unreal, but this is what the job's about. It is. It is.
And we're talking about Tim, and I know his background from I don't want to say stalking him, but like I know where he came from and the stuff that he's been able to see. And the ones who I feel like see that as a threat are just the ones who don't want to get outside their comfort zone. Like, there is nothing wrong with when those tones drop to get running to the truck. You see guys that'll walk leisurely, and I'm like, bro, let's go. And it, I yeah, the
It's the
whole,
culture, man. It really is the culture, and you got to get buy-in. Somehow you got to get the buy-in with the guys, and it's hard to really tell you if you're having issues, Danny, of how I can tell you to get buy-in. Because it may be totally different than the buy-in that I'm getting at the firehouse. But the culture you bring is it's gonna be the end game of what's gonna happen. You come out and it's turn and burn. We going. We moving. Let's go. We want to go to fires. I don't like people losing their stuff. I don't like people getting hurt, but I guess I don't be a fireman. I want to go to fires. I want to beat people that are first due. I don't want to throw it in their face. That's not what I'm saying, but like that means that this company's got their shit together.
For sure. Okay. With you being a boss, what if I'm a new firefighter coming to work for you, or I'm an existing firefighter, but either way, you are the new company officer of that crew. What is a non-negotiable when individuals work with you?
No cell phones at dinner. My number one rule. No cell phones at dinner. And the reason for that is that's when you get to know your people. Now, there's a lot of other things, but you really want to hit me hard. This technology and people being on their phones all day is driving me insane, to be completely honest with you. I think we've lost touch of individuals who we are. And on my expectation list, the last one, number 20, is no cell phones at the dinner table. Now, I don't care about lunch. I don't care about breakfast. Dinner, when we sit down after a long day, you get to for 45 minutes. If you can't get away from your phone for 45 minutes, you have a serious problem. You need to really go talk to a therapist. I don't know what to tell you. I've had my old battalion chief, we eat dinner at 6 o'clock. We try to. Between 6 and 7 is our time. And he's actually called me and I didn't answer the phone. If he knew it was important, he called the firehouse and we'd answer the phone. That is my one of my rules is that's how you get to know your people. You sit down. All right, Danny, what are you doing on your 4 days off? We work 40, 96 schedule. Hey, what are you doing on your 4 days off? Oh, hey, man, I got this going on. My wife's got this going on. My kids, everything like that. And next you know, you're sitting there shooting shit for 45 minutes about everything, about life, about the department, about what you're looking to do. You're going back to school or whatever it is. That is a non-negotiable thing for me, is sitting at the dinner table with no cell phones. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it.
All right. How long has North Charleston been doing the 4896?
2.5 years, two and a half years. Yeah, 2.5 years, I think.
I'm assuming your other departments, was it that same schedule or something different?
No, we were the 2448 with Bill Kelly. I thought that was the best thing ever.
All right,
You
so
know?
I want to know your genuine opinion when you found out that that's what North Charleston did, or I don't know if they were doing 2448s and then they switched over. Either
They
way,
did.
what is your take on it now?
I was undecided at first because I came as a 2448. That's all I knew. I thought it was awesome. One day on, 2 days off. This is great. I can drink beer on my days off, whole nine yards until you realize you need to work a part-time job and, or you're working overtime and you're working a 4824. And that became the norm. Honestly, working a 4824 or, you're working a 2448, working an overtime shift or whatever. That was the norm. And I remember when the two guys at the city brought it up. And they went into the chief and they said, hey, 2472. They slid the packet across and he's like, slid it back. He goes, yeah, not a chance. Okay, 4896. He goes, let me hear it. And I guess they brought it up quite a few years ago. It got brought up and got shot down. Well, Zach and Kyle that brought it up did a great job bringing it up to the chief. And chief goes, I'm not working it. Put it out to the boys, put it out to the men, put it out to the department. Let's see what they say. So they did, and there was a lot of pushback. A lot of pushback, and it was more for the guys at that time on the job. They're like, I'm not doing that. Screw that. That ain't happening. So Chief Milano said, 6 month trial. You guys vote on a 6 month trial. Okay. It passed by four votes. Because we needed 60 two-thirds vote, what 66 point, whatever it was. It got 67 point like two or point three. It literally passed by four votes. So we got the 6 month trial. And it was month two or three when four guys got forced for a 48. So they were working a 96. And I said, oh boy, we're screwed. We're gonna lose this. There ain't no way, man. The forced overtime's back. There ain't no way. Well, a lot of guys stepped up day two and covered their shifts. So I was like, ooh, thank God, And the 6 month trial came up and it was like 5.5 months. We took a vote and it passed with a 92% pass rating. So you saw like these guys are loving it. Well, my wife saw a different aspect of it coming home and not dead ass tired because I was working a 2448 or 4824. I only had one day to recover and go to Lowe's and go grocery shopping, go to the gym, everything like that. Now I have 4 days off. And she's like, you better not go back when that trial was done. You better not go back to a 2448. I can't handle it. You are a total different person when you come home. And she goes, when you work overtime, you can only work 72. You work 96, you kind of get grumpy. And I said, yeah, 4 days away, I guess it's kind of rough. But I love it. I love the mental aspect of it when I go home. So like you get your first day off is like your screw off day. That's your recovery day. You have day two, day three to work an overtime shift, work a part-time job, do shit around the house. And day four is kind of like your, all right, tomorrow I gotta go back to work. Because we're gonna take it easy, and then you're back at it again. And by day three, I'm ready to go back to work. I'm eager because it's just too much time off, it feels. you know, but I love it.
And you feel like for your example, like your truck that you're on, your engine is a busy engine. So you do feel that you get enough rest before it's time to go back in.
Oh yeah, you have to.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, man, there's days I didn't get sleep last night. We're all there. We're
Right,
all there.
right.
I mean, man, people got kids and everything else in their personal lives going on, and you have to be respectful for it, you know. But when you're turning, I think last shift, 2 shifts ago, we took 27 runs in 2 days. On top of everything else, it's busy, you know. And you have to, one, you have to have the mental game to be ready for that. On top of whatever else you have in your personal life going on, you know. And when you take a shift off on the new schedule, when you take 148 off, you have 10 days off.
Right.
When you take a 24 off with the 2448, you only have 8. So that's a huge perk too. I mean, I just took 3 shifts off, you know, and I was off for 22 days. You know, and that's, I got a lot accomplished around the house, you know, and did a little teaching, you know, when we were out of town and everything. But that is, the time off is huge. I don't even know if I'd like a 2472, to be honest
Right,
with you. I
right.
mean, no, don't get me wrong, work less, get paid more.
Yeah.
That's a no-brainer. But when you start looking at your time off, and the recovery is second to none, to be completely honest with you.
Okay.
You know, you just feel reduced to really go back to work, man. And excited too. Because you know, when you work the 2448 or you pick up overtime here on the 40, you're like, oh God, feels like I'm always here.
Yeah. Yep.
And now I don't. I really don't. Like I'm like tomorrow I'm working overtime tomorrow, and then I'm on a buddy shift. So then I am working a 96 the next 4 days, but I got off yesterday morning. I had all day yesterday, and I have all day today off. And I go back for 96, but then I'm off for 4 days. So it's really not that bad. And it's easier now to work your overtime, especially if you like doing that. You
Right.
know, some guys like working overtime. It's so much easier now,
Okay.
especially on the body for recovery.
Okay. See, we have a rule where the only way, if I remember right, reading it right, the only way a member can work a 96, they have to get like a chief's approval. Like
Okay.
that is like not allowed,
They
really.
just dropped the rule on us. We used to be able to work nonstop. They never had a policy. So guys were working days on end. But now they came down and they said 96 is the cap. You can't work
Okay.
any more than 96 unless it's a special weather event, you
Okay.
know, and it's something approved by the city. But yep, 96 is the most we can work.
Okay.
And that's between buddy shifts, overtime too,
Right,
or
right.
trades or swaps, whatever you want to call it.
Okay. All right. I read something that you had posted a while back, and I was just like, yeah, I am definitely gonna bring this up when this interview happens. So I'm gonna read you something.
Sure.
The calls don't break us, the people do. Weak men, lazy minds, and copycats will tear this job apart faster than any call we run. Some days it's not on the fire ground that beats you, it's the brother standing next to you. Which I was like, very profound, just because I hear it all the time. I say it myself, like, what we do for a living is the greatest job in the world, minus the politics, the BS. I mean, that all comes with working for a government entity. I get it. But nothing tears us down faster. Nothing is worse than seeing the bullshit that happens within our own organizations, our own firehouse. The people talking shit. The people who all they have to hear is, hey, that guy Danny, yeah, he's a piece of shit. All right, cool. Danny's a piece of shit in my mind. Like, don't give him a chance, her a chance, or nothing. Like the fire service comes together when we need to on line of duty deaths, injuries, stuff like that. But when it comes to eating ourselves up, man, like we are, it's like, hold my beer. I just want to know, in your opinion, why are we like that?
I really think a lot of it has to do with jealousy. I really do. I think you have this podcast and this platform exploding. It is huge, right? And you're going to get some guy out there that's just going to trash talk you that's never met you in your life,
I've already had that done, but go ahead.
right?
Yep.
Okay. It's somebody that's jealous of you. Somebody, whatever you're doing, what you're doing a phenomenal job with this, is jealous that you're getting the accreditation and the people that are coming to sit down and talk bullshit with you for an hour, hour and a half, drink beer with you. They're jealous. They're jealous of Danny B. And people, jealousy, man, will eat somebody alive. I love it. It makes me do more. I had that post right there was a guy that robbed my program of the title. And it was a chief in another department in the low country. And I get a phone call on that. He goes, "Hey, I don't want to start any legal things." Well, I'm sitting there, I'm like, "Oh shit, what'd I do?" You know, like what did I have no idea, you know? And he tells me, he goes, "Look this up." And I said, "You gotta be kidding me." And I wasn't gonna say anything. I wasn't. I was like, "You know what? No, fuck that. This guy needs to be heard." And I shot him a message. I was very professional about it. Very professional about it. And I'm like, "Come on, man. Like I busted my ass for this program and you're gonna just gonna rob it." And you know, my title is "So You Promoted, Now What?" His was "So You're in Charge, Now What?" I'm like, "Are you kidding me?" And his whole synopsis was the same of mine. Like, what? And you're a chief, like literally an admin. And I'm just like, what is with people just stealing people and jealous of people? You should be happy somebody's doing something good in their life. You really should be. Danny, when you get promoted, let me know. Let's meet up and we'll have a beer. Because you know what? That's you're doing something better to better yourself, and you should be happy for that individual. That's exactly what it is. You know, if we're not sitting there, and I tell you, like the brotherhood, it's a wild term right now. It really is because it's changed. You have to be there for your people. Just reach out to them, especially if somebody's out injured. That's a time where you're trying to figure out who's there for you and who's not. You know, reach out, Danny. You good? You need anything? You know, most of them would be like, "What the? What's this guy messing?" No, like I genuinely give a shit. Let me know what you need, man. We had a guy get injured on a job, and the union stepped up and did a benefit for him, a helmet raffle and a benefit and everything. We raised money for him because that's what you do for your people. That's what you do. Don't sit there and dog people. I'll talk shit all day long. I really will. I'll talk shit with the good ones, but it's talking shit in a good way. It's building you up. It's not dogging you. Not treating you like garbage. You know, if someone fucked up, let them know they fucked up and make it better for them. You know, I mean, why are we just trashing people? Unless it really is a human being that is just downright nasty. Okay, then we're in a different ballpark, man. But like, why are we dogging people? I don't get it. And that post got a lot of attention. And I loved it. I loved it. And I love the people when we do post stuff like that they go, "Is that about me? I don't know. You fit the mold." You know, maybe you should sit back and look at yourself in the mirror. If you think it's about you, maybe you should change yourself.
No, I agree. And you know, it's just one of those things. Like I'm not a generational fireman. You know, I came into this. I literally came into this profession on accident. You know, I needed community service hours to graduate up north, and I thought I was signing up to just go vacuum and mop firehouses, and it ended up being an application for membership. But like, I through my experiences when I was a volunteer, and then I went to the career side, and I was still a volunteer, and I worked part time other places. It's amazing, like the bravado. Like I equate it to high school. Like the jocks think certain people think they're jocks, and they think you're the nerd, or you're not Mr. Popular, and then they say stuff about you, they assume things, and then when they finally, if they ever get to actually do talk to you or work besides you, they're like, "Oh man, like I never knew this person felt this way, or they had this kind of characteristic or this athletic ability in the fire service." So I will say, like, I was a hermit in my shell. Like, you know, when you're young, you think you know it all. And I think with age comes maturity, or hopefully it does, you know. And
100%.
like as I got older, I just witnessed things, and I'm like, okay. And then so when I started this whole thing, you know, automatically a lot of people are like, "Who is this guy? Like, where does he work? What's his experience level? I've worked with him before. He was never like that." And I'm like, well, yeah, I admit that. I was very quiet. Like, unless I knew you know, then I would talk to you. But if I didn't know people in the room, like I'm just sitting back observing, I'm watching, I keep to myself. And you know, so I think by me doing this, I understand the questions that people get, and I will gladly answer it. But it's the what I won't stand for is somebody saying, oh, this guy's really not into it. He's doing it for whatever the case may be, like I'm making millions of dollars doing this. And it's really what it is for me. It's a reset. It's a rejuvenation. Talking to you, hearing your mindset, it just keeps me focused on, okay, screw what the naysayers are saying. I listen to Chad. Like, just keep moving forward, making progress one day at a time.
Yeah, you want to, you when you're in a rut, okay, we all get those. We do. We fall into ruts, we fall into bumps in the road, whatever you want to call it, right? Go sit and listen to a podcast. Go sit and listen to an hour lecture on somebody. It don't even have to be the fire service. It can be something, a motivational speaker. It'll pull you right out. I will tell you that right now. And especially go to those lectures that people are into it, not the death by PowerPoint ones. But you sit through somebody that's got some enthusiasm behind their voice, and you're like, man, I can't fall asleep through this shit. Holy cow. It will bring you up because you're going to take it back to work. And it's going to fire the guys up. Well, hopefully, I've got motivated guys that'll get you out of that rut you need. We all fall into them, life problems, family problems, the whole nine yards. It's life. Life throws curveballs every day, and you have to advance and get out of them. You have to redirect yourself. And if it's sitting through this, listening to us talk today and help somebody, 100%. I hope it does. I hope it reaches 500 people. And out of those 500 people, it helps one person.
In effect. Okay. I already know what your answer is going to be on this, but I want to ask it anyway. What's your take on outside training, getting outside the four walls of your own organization?
When I never had an opportunity to have that years ago, I didn't know any different,
That's
to be
right.
honest with you. Like a lot of us training companies, prime example, and I bring this up because I have to be fortunate to be involved with one. They weren't really around. Well, one, when we grew up, we didn't have social media. So we had Firehouse Engineering and Firehouse Magazine. That's all we had. So we didn't have the luxury of knowing, oh, Danny's department's having a conference. Like you knew FDIC, that was it. So all the classes you had, especially where I grew up, you didn't have outside companies coming in or outside training. You had state curriculum, and it was done by a lot of the city guys teaching your truck class and fire one and fire two. So a lot of that stuff, you were getting outside training from guys that were on the city department by the state curriculum is what I grew up around. And it wasn't until I came down here and I met up with Aaron with on-scene fire training that I was like, holy shit, like who are these guys? Like, this is awesome. Like, they're bringing in stuff from, guys from California and everywhere else and bringing it to me. And the one thing that I figured out was, Danny, you do all the training at your department, and guys are just like, screw Danny. Like, we've heard this before, right? But you know what's funny is you can tell myself, well, I'll come in and then do your training, right? You tell me what to say, exactly what you're going to say, and they're going to take it a different way. And they're going to sit there and listen. It's the mundane things they hear from the department from the same guys all the time, all the time. And it's the guy coming in with a different perspective to say the same thing Danny was going to say. It is huge to get training outside your department and outside your comfort zone to really grow as a fireman. South Carolina curriculum is limited on a lot of things. We don't have like a really good engine class. They don't, the state curriculum just don't have it. They have fire one. They have a support company class now, which is used to be a residential truck company. They did a support company, but like you can do so much more. And having an outside training company or you going to a conference to learn lines over ladders, that's not taught anywhere, or an elevator class, because there's never a class on that, is huge because you're going to bring it back, even a through the locked door prop. When you go to these lockout calls, that's not a state class. That's something you learn from somebody else that somehow learned it from somebody else that got passed down to them and it got to you. So when you are sitting here and you're learning off other individuals, it's going to make you better. Prime example at the fire the other day. We had a fire 2 days ago, and the fireman was having a difficult time forcing the door to get in. I told him, move out of the way. I spiked the jamb and I opened the door. He looked at me afterwards. He's like, thank you. I've never seen that before. I didn't know I could do that. It's the little things like that that you learn from other individuals and you pass on to them. He watched something he's never seen before that I learned off somebody else years ago, not even in my own department. It's just the little things like that that make you grow as an individual at the end of the day. So when you have outside guys coming in, It's gonna really bring your training up, and you're gonna want to do more and more and more. And as long as your department allows it, we'll come. We will come and help.
That's awesome. Okay. While we're on that topic, what is the name of the company and how can individuals, make that happen for them?
So Aaron Heller, he's with On Scene Training Associates out of New Jersey. He's on Facebook, he's on Instagram, he's on social media. Aaron is awesome. He does so much, so many different programs. Name a class, he probably has a guy for it. And he will take care of anything you need. Give him a call. Actually, you can shoot him a message probably on any social media thing, and he will get back to you. It's probably the best way to put it.
Okay. Have you ever thought in your wildest dreams that you would create a class and be fortunate to go out and teach others?
No, not a chance in hell. When I got the phone call, actually, it was asked, "Hey, would you like to speak at this conference?" I really thought he needed like a keynote speech or like a pep talk.
Okay.
And when I came back, I said, "Is that what?" He's like, "No, I'd like you to present." I said, "At what? Like, why are you calling me?" And he goes, "Well, you got recommended, blah blah blah." And I was like, "Okay, what would you like me to present on?" He goes, "Anything you want." And I said, "Well, this doesn't help. What are the other individuals presenting on, so I don't present the same material or something close, you know?" And he goes, "Well, this guy's doing this." And I said, "Can you give me a couple of days to think about this? Because I don't have anything prepared, because I never thought it would ever happen." And I came back and I talked to a bunch of people and I said, "Hey, I have this opportunity. What do you think?" And if you follow me on social media, a lot of it is on leadership and taking care of people. And I think that's what lacking in the fire service. And they said, "Maybe you should do something on that." I said, "Okay." And that was probably one of the hardest things I've ever done in my life, other than my EMT exam for National Registry. It was probably the hardest thing, was taking ideas from my head and putting it into PowerPoint and making it flow. It was super, super hard. And I've tweaked it up 7 times since the first time I've presented it.
Okay. All right. That's awesome. That's awesome. One thing I noticed South Carolina, in my opinion, I think that is that what they're doing is awesome. There's a company officer type program, and I don't know if it's all of South Carolina, but I think it is, where if you're a company officer or you're striving to be, I think is how it works. You go there, and not only do you do educational pieces, sit inside lectures and have classroom discussions, but it looks like they also incorporate PT with it. And I think that is a huge step because, like you mentioned earlier, when you decide to be a boss, what I dislike about the fire service is, all right, I want to become a boss. If I'm able to get that, there's no follow-up in most organizations. Like, it's like, all right, hey, I raised my hand. I want to get promoted. I will tell you A, B, and C checklist things that I will do. Once I get it, I can go back to being the not so great performing firefighter slash company officer. But like, I love how South Carolina is like kind of incorporating that. So if we can kind of talk about individuals that raise their hand that yes, I want to get promoted, and then when they are fortunate to get it, they might do good until they get our probation, and once probation's over, they go right back to who they really were.
Yeah, a lot of people, when they promote, they do as much as they can to be, "Oh, look at me, look what I can do, look what I can do." And we all know deep down, they're like, "Yep, nope, that definitely not gonna be that guy." Or they never. In one of my slides, the program says, if you weren't a leader before you were promoted, you won't be a leader after you're promoted. Because the informal leaders, when you're a fireman, set the tone from when you promote. If you're not doing the dirty work and in the bottom level, you're not really going to do really good work when you get to the top level. It's just how it is. And a lot of guys, we don't have a leadership development. And I think that's poor. And that's everywhere. A lot of
Right.
places
Yes.
don't have,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
You get your you take your classes, you study, you test, you make the list. And I really think if you make a promotional list, Danny, and if this is an opportunity you're taking, I don't care if you're number one or you're the last one. That is a huge achievement in anybody's life to make a promotional list. I don't care what anybody says. There's so many people that say, "Oh, where do you want to land on the list?" You know what I tell them? I just want to make the list. Let's start there, because it's hard. Some people aren't test takers, so they're going to fault on that. Some people are more hands-on thing, but then they're going to fault because the test score wasn't really that good. So you making a promotional list, Danny, is absolutely a milestone in anybody's career. And then when you get promoted, they give you the keys and say, "Good luck. Don't crash." That's all you get. You don't get what they expect out of you. Your battalion chief may come down and tell you, hey, I expect this, or well, you know, what do you expect out of me and everything, but there's no bridge program from where you are to where you need to be. And I think that's poor. And that company officer class in Columbia, I haven't had the opportunity to take it yet, but I know a good handful that have, and they said it is the best class that they've ever taken in their life. Now, they won't give out the secrets of why the class is the best thing, because I'm pretty sure they're told the secrecy not to. But they have nothing but positive things to say about it. They say it's a rigorous class that has turned their mindset in a positive direction on being a company officer.
And I feel like that's what we need more of. And because, you know, the fire service does a great job when it comes to, all right, you want to be a boss? We need to do tactics. We're going to do tactical exercises, tactical scenarios. But when it comes to, all right, paperwork, knowing your crew, being able to have tough conversations, like if you're my captain and I come to you and I'm like, hey, Chad, Cap, bro, listen, like I have a problem and I need help. Like most people are going to go, you know what I mean? Like, what do I do in this situation? I feel like that's where we are falling short. I think one of the things, it's just my opinion, I think maybe some organizations just don't want to have that outside person who's very strong in leadership come in and teach their organization because it's not somebody within.
And you know, it's you want to know the hardest part of being a boss is the people you work with. It's not the calls. It's not. Yes, do we have to really go through what first do and second do and what I expect, Danny, what I expect you to do? 100%. The hardest part of your job is dealing with people at the firehouse because you are a therapist. You are a mental guy. I mean, you are everything. You and especially then the citizens. They're not just calling because their house is on fire now. They're calling because they have a water leak. They're calling because their electric flashed, and you're getting called to fix that problem. Not only that, you're fixing problems at the firehouse too. There's so many people that have personal things going on in their lives, including you and I, included, that you have to navigate through life and do the best you can to not bring it to work. But you are there to help them. You want to be a good leader, you need to take care of your people. And I think that's a misconstrued thing because a lot of people rush to promote where they don't have the life experiences, like you said earlier, about the maturity level. And I think when someone promotes, they don't have this job is built out of experience. And if you don't have the life experiences, not maybe not this the fire experience, because that will come in more departments burn than others. So some of us are more blessed than others, and that's fine, but on life in general and your maturity level is going to make you so much better as a human being to help yourself be a leader at the end of the day.
That's a fact.
You
Okay.
have to, man.
Yeah. All right. I always like to ask this guest this last question. Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it all up?
Since my life has done a total 180 of never wanting to promote and you know, this question gets asked a lot to a lot of individuals. You know, where do you see yourself in 5 years? Or where do you see yourself when you hang it up? Or where do you sell? And I always say that I want to impact one person in my life. It's all I ever want to do. I want to impact one person to know that whatever I did in my life or whatever it did in my career impacts somebody. A lot of people ask me, you know, where do you ever want to go higher than you are? Well, one, I didn't want to get where I'm at now. So let's start there. I don't see myself in a buggy, even though my wife says she sees me in a buggy. I'm not done going to fires. I love going to fires. I love going to a firehouse. I love riding on a fire truck. If it's I'm an engine guy, but I love riding on a fire truck. I love being around the guys. I think the more I deal with people, the more I don't like people. But I think we could all agree on that. But before I hang it up, you know, this job is a rocky roller coaster. It'll mentally and physically beat you more mentally than anything nowadays. It used to be physical, and you need to take care of yourself. And I think before I retire, I told my wife I have 16 years left just because I can't buy my New York time because it's too darn expensive. That I'm retiring in 16 years. And she laughed at me. And I said, no, I'm done. And she goes, nah, you're not done. I said, I'll probably still volunteer here in Horry County for sure, but I'll be done punching in. And she goes, no way. I said, Richie died 4 years after retirement. I'm not going to be a statistic. I'm going to enjoy retirement. I'm retiring when I hit the in 16 years. And when I hang it up, I hope I impacted one person. I really do. That's all I can ask for in this career is I had fun. It was some really good times, some not so good times, you know. But you have to be there for each other. And to know that I impacted one person in my career, I think is a huge, huge step in my life that I think I'll fulfill myself in this career.
Okay. And to me, that's life, like ups and downs, good days, bad days. Like, the way I look at life, anytime I get to a point where I'm like this is a shitty day, or I'm just in a not great, I stop and then I'm like, bro, there are so many things I can, there are so many things for me to be grateful for. And there's somebody else out there that has it worse than I do. And then it just like snaps me back. Like, I get it. The politics, the bullshit, the people you work with that aren't into the job, those are all little stressors. But at the end of the day, I can say that when I show up to work, I am prepared. I do the best of my ability to make sure my captain is good with my performance. I go home to see my family, and I did everything I could while I was there because I'm being paid to be there. So I understand your sentiments, and I wholeheartedly agree. Like, when I leave this job, it's going to happen to everybody. The one thing I always remember is, man, we're all replaceable. Like our replacement's already set before we even know it. And so, as much as this job is awesome, like for you, when you retire, your wife, that's going to be your priority, living your life, knowing that you had a hell of a career, you did some awesome shit, but now it's time to go enjoy it because we
And
don't
you have to.
know when
You
that
have
date
to.
is, that expiration date.
Yep. And you want to have a positive thing at work. Stop worrying about shit you can't control.
Yes. And
And
that's
that's
something
very.
I had to learn that. I had to learn that.
And it's very hard. And we all fall into it. I'm going to be the first guy to tell you that. We fall into it. And I have to realize myself, I can't control that. Why the hell am I worried about it? Stop. Because it's just going to drag people down. And you go to work and you can't worry about pay, man. You can't. You have no control over pay. You have control over making more money, working overtime or working a part-time job, but your normal salary, you got no control over that. You have no control over hiring or firing or any of that or what happens in City Hall. You have no control over that stuff. You know what you have control over? The four walls of your firehouse. That's what you have control over. And you have to stay positive with your people. But we all fall into that negative stuff and you have to snap out of it. You really do. There's no doubt.
Chad, man, I appreciate you doing this. I like to give credit whenever I can remember because there's so many names I go through. John Smith, he contacted me and he was like, "Hey, I got a guy for you. Reach out to him. Let him know that I gave you his information." And he was like, "If he doesn't, then I'll twist his arm or something." But John Smith, man, I really appreciate you getting me in contact with Chad. Chad, I see you're doing great things down in South Carolina from your teaching, the jobs that you post, just your overall attitude and love, and the fact that I got to hear it firsthand. Just everything goes hand in hand with who you are and what you post. So I gotta say thank you, man, for coming on and talking shop with me. I really appreciated this.
Danny, thank you for John. Thank you for giving the name. I really don't really like being in the spotlight. Danny, thank you. Keep this podcast going. Don't ever fall into negativity, man, because it's out there. You'll have the scraps. Don't even let them push you, man. Keep pushing this out, man. I really appreciate you inviting me on. This is a huge honor. Thank you. Thank you so much.
No, yes, sir. Thank you. I really appreciate it, man. You hopefully have a great rest of your day.
Yeah, you too, man.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.